All right, welcome back. Hope everybody had a good break. This one's called Struggle. Life acquires meaning when we face the conflict between our desires and reality. We all have different personalities vying for predominance in our lives. Some come out at just the right moment. At other times, our aspirations and our fondest hopes find little support in our environment. Only a few can truly say that they are living their lives exactly according to their desires. For the majority of us, life is a series of conflicts between our inner ideas and our outer constrictions. How will we test ourselves against the flexing of external circumstances? Goals are important. Forbearance is also important. But the very process of struggle is equally essential. Rice must undergo the hardship of pounding in order to become white. Steel must endure the forge in order to become strong. Adversity is the tempering of one's mettle. Without it, we cannot know any true meaning in our accomplishments. Of course, when things happen without struggle, it does not mean that we did not deserve it. A musician may compose a brilliant piece in an afternoon. An artist will dash off a masterpiece in a single sitting. A writer will write significant passages as if they were dictated. Each might say it happened so fast, but in reality, it took all of them years of dedication and struggle to come to that moment of climax. Thus, even the virtuoso performance is the tip of a lifetime of struggle, and the gem of meaning is set in the metal of long perseverance. 2 minute meditation. So, if alcohol and drugs are your problem, your time here at the Bridges is as hard. That's as hard as it's going to be for you. If alcoholism and addiction is your problem, you haven't seen anything yet. For most of us, the further away we are from our last drink or last drug, the more we start to slam up against what the real problem is. And it's our struggle with existence. We struggle through life, most of us, judgmental, personal relationships, stressed, full of fear and anxiety, unhappy most of the time, hunted by misery and depression from time to time, feeling useless, can't be of real help to other people, no sense of purpose, constantly bored. And we find something that works, alcohol and or drugs. And then we reach that point that we've gone beyond human aid because we've lost power, choice, and control, but we can't exist out in this crazy thing called the world, so we need something to help us get through the existence. And we keep on thinking that one day we'll regain the control that we used to have, that we'll be able to control and enjoy our drinking and our using. And so the struggle leads us back into the addiction, and then we are in this vicious cycle of sobering up or getting clean and can't exist, and we begin to struggle. We can't get through the honing and the polishing of life. That's what life really does to our character. It hones us, it polishes us, it tempers us. And so, at some point, I woke up to this idea of my intent with the struggle. That going into a period of struggle is existence or God's way of tempering me, of pointing things out to me that I need to look at, of tapping me on the shoulder and saying, this is how I'm going to continue to show up until you acknowledge my presence in all of it. And as a result, I tend to grow through the struggle. It's the Buddhists, the lotus plant grows out of the mud. So suffering is an essential part of spiritual enlightenment for the Buddhists. You have to suffer in order to escalate from station to station. They compare it to the beautiful lotus that comes out of the mud. The suffering and the struggle is in the mud. And so we're moving into the part of the big book that we call unmanageability or bedevilments. And Brandon's going to cover that, but that's ultimately what we're going to struggle with as we move into the next phase of our development after we put down the drugs and the alcohol. For the majority of us, life is a series of conflicts between inner ideas and outer circumstances. And that's what we begin to rub up against. And so what we do is we try to take this reflection on my current unmanageability. I do it on a regular basis. At least once a year, I'm going to sit down and look at the state of my internal condition and my external relationships and how they're being affected. Because that's what's tempering me. And if left unchecked, what will happen is it'll become unbearable. And if I'm not in a spiritual program of action or inaction at times, I'm not going to weather the storm. And so we're going to take a little bit of a different perspective on it. There are some people in the rooms that believe when the unmanageability comes, you got to do more. You're not praying enough. You're not meditating enough. You're not going to enough meetings. You're not sponsoring enough people. And what you start doing is out of fear. You know, what I suggest is you embrace it as an opportunity to see where you need to grow and go from there. So we've wrapped up the first half of the first step, which is powerlessness, physical and mental. Now there's a dash that our lives have become unmanageable. And that's what Brandon's going to talk about.
So who thought that their life was unmanageable because of drugs and alcohol? Okay. You know, in grammar, a dash is there for a independent but yet connected thought. So that our life has become unmanageable can stand on its own without that we're powerless over alcohol and drugs. So I don't know about you, but a lot of people that I encounter when I'm taking them through the steps or even in the rooms, that they think that because they already know what their God looks like, that this chapter that starts on page 44, called We Agnostics, is not relevant to their experience. I feel sorry for them because this is one of the best chapters in the book. So it says in the preceding chapters, 1 through 3 plus doctor's opinion, you have learned something of alcoholism and drug addiction. We hope that we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and non-alcoholic, okay, or addict and non-addict. But just in case you're not sure, they're going to go ahead and remind you what that is. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely for the rest of your life, not just one day at a time, or if when using, you have little control over the amount you take, I don't like the word probably. You are alcoholic. You are addict. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So to one who feels that he's atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as you've been living your life means disaster. Especially if you are an alcoholic or addict of the hopeless variety. Who in here thinks they're hopeless? How many times do you need to relapse to get to the point where you're actually hopeless? I don't know. Once I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have not relapsed. It was one for me. Now, the truth is that if I had been exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous years prior, I would have had like a closet full of white chips. But I really, for whatever reason, I had neatly patterned my life in a way that I didn't know that the fellowship really existed. I just didn't. Complete ignorance of the fact. So when I got delivered to it, I was open to it. But I was absolutely hopeless. My life, as I explained to you last night, was a mess. There was not a single category of life where I could put a little one for Brandon in. It was like things Brandon's doing correctly, nothing. Things Brandon's struggling with, check, 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 check. So for me, it got real, real clear that it was more about how I was living my life than just the alcohol. And then it repeats our choice here that we talked about before, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live life on a spiritual basis are not easy alternatives to face. Okay, turn to page 151. This will kind of help you distinguish yourself a little bit more if you be alcoholic or addict. For most normal folks, drinking and using means conviviality, companionship, colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and the feeling that life is good. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking or using. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never, no matter how hard we tried, could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was the insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and the heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. Anyone? Who's got that? Who had lunch? I'm just, what? The rest of you guys didn't eat lunch? Okay. Just trying to see how many people we actually have paying attention. The less people tolerated us, anybody? Got anybody that's tolerating them less? The more we withdrew from society and life itself, We became subjects of King Alcohol, King Crack Cocaine, King Heroin, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor and the loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily we did, and then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to the face of the hideous four horsemen. Terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Those four guys show up. They showed up for me, drunk or sober. Unhappy drinkers and users who read this page will understand. So, then we have some of you sitting in this room. We'll describe you. Now and then, serious drinker being dry at the moment, serious user being clean at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers and users, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like the boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday, he will be unable to imagine life either with or without alcohol. Then he will know loneliness, such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. So, in early sobriety, you start to experience this thing called life. I heard it early in sobriety. It said, you know, people told me that I would feel better if I stopped drinking. You feel resentment better. You feel anger better. You feel loneliness better. Because I don't have that thing to numb me. Okay? And so on page 52, we have this paragraph that some people call the Dark Promises. We like to call them the bedevilments. Or it's untreated alcoholism, drug addiction, or an unmanageability exercise. So right in the middle of page 52, let's do this two ways. So when drinking and using, we were having trouble in personal relationships. Who has that? When drinking or using, we couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. Couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Okay? Sober or clean? Let's look at it. Having trouble in personal relationships. I'm 6 years sober. I have trouble in personal relationships. Couldn't control our emotional natures. Sober. Prey to misery and depression. Sober. Couldn't make a living. Had a feeling of uselessness. Full of fear. We were unhappy. Couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. That's unmanageability, guys. If you can answer yes to any of those, that's the second part of the first step. Our lives had become unmanageable. We were incapable of living life without being in conflict with those around us. Who had a bunch of money and still got drunk or high? Who was broke and got drunk or high? Who got drunk or high when the girl was there? Who got drunk and high when the girl wasn't there? Who got drunk because it was Tuesday? Rainy day? Sunny day? When I was alone? When I was with people? All these conditions that we think are the reasons that we drank and used have nothing to do with all the reasons why we drank and used. We drank and used because our lives were completely unmanageable. And we needed something to temper our experience. We needed something to numb out what was going on up here or in here. The second half of the first step hammers this into us. After this point, the book hardly talks about alcohol. It talks about us and our internal condition and what's going on. If you look at the steps, other than the 12 steps referencing alcoholics, the only step that uses the word alcoholic or alcohol is the
short form.
Is the short form of the first step. Thank you. So it means steps 2 through 12 are about something other than alcohol and drugs. So what's our problem? Is our problem really drugs and alcohol? Or is our problem the way that we interact with the world? How many people have told you about that? Well-meaning people. Not cutting them down. They're not trying to harm you by not saying that. They just don't know. Your family members? They see what drugs and alcohol do to you, so they think it's about the drugs and the alcohol. That's why you're so baffling to them. I don't know about you guys, but I just was never right until I started drinking. I never fit in. I never had the complete map of how I'm supposed to act. I started drinking, I didn't care. That's why I liked it so much.
Mm-hmm. So there's the internal unmanageability, then there's external unmanageability. The internal unmanageability is the breeding ground for the mental obsession to return, for the illusion that I would rather get high or drink than exist the way I'm existing. So you've reached a transition point. There's always transition points throughout this entire program, but we've just wrapped up the first step and we've reached a transition point. And I want to read something. One's sense of achievement must die so that the sacred can radiate within the heart. The point of death for the selfish desires is the point of revival for the soul or the spirit. At this point, spirit is waiting for you. Spirit is both the undertaker and the midwife at this point. Spirit shatters illusions and delusions through life experience and then gives meaning and direction to the spirit's search and the soul's search. If, like Moses, Alexander, and Gilgamesh, the seeker vows to keep up the journey even if it takes a lifetime, departure point, transition point, decision to make, even though he has to retrace his steps many times, causes and conditions, then at the right place and time, he will encounter spirit who will guide him from station to station. Spirit lives on a green island by the source of the water of immortality. He is the life force behind all natural phenomena, things that we cannot explain. He's also the life force behind the things we can explain. Nothing can be alive and vital without spirit's touch or presence. When a seeker goes through times of emptiness and depression, like the bedevilment in an inner wilderness where nothing seems to grow, he has seemingly lost touch with spirit. It appears this spirit has veiled himself. But he is there, hiding behind the thorny, barren branches or the emptiness of water holes, stressed out personal relationships, a feeling of uselessness, fear, anxiety, misery, depression. When friends gather and there's no feeling of intimacy and empathy, when words sound empty and meaningless, spirit seems to be absent. Spirit keeps himself in hiding. When things become mechanical, repetitive, unconscious, then too, spirit appears to be veiled. But if companions gather with a sense of purpose, crushed by a self-imposed crisis they can't postpone or evade, if there is something meaningful in their lives that has brought them together, here, now, and if that which happens in that here and now has vitality, then they know this is the imprint of spirit. when the eyes glimmer and shine, when love is in the air, spirit is around. But also when idols are smashed, when the traveler, the addict, alcoholic experiences states of rage, sadness, frustration, anxiety, when he cannot go on with his routine, with idly surrendering to the tyranny of circumstances, when he has reached a point of no return, when he feels the time has come to risk that which has been taken for granted, then provided the time is right, he will know that spirit is at work in the midst of all the darkness. When despair becomes greater than fear, it is spirit who intervenes and comes to his help as the remover of obstacles. This ever-present life force gives the seeker, the addict and alcoholic, the strength to change the direction of his erring life. So this unmanageability can drive you into the work. So you've removed, drugs and alcohol have been removed, and now you're going to stand at a turning point, because without the spiritual program of action we call the 12 steps, the internal condition, the bedevilments on page 52 will become unbearable, and you won't see spirit in it. You won't set the intent to grow through the struggle. You'll want to take some sort of course of action that will numb the experience, and you'll reject the experience, and you will have to start all over again if that is the experience you're meant to have. So this is what we're talking about here. The unmanageability can be a catalyst. It can be part of the launching pad. The launching pad into a course of action against your will, contrary to the way you've lived your life.
Confusion. Who in here thinks they're a pretty smart person? I think I'm pretty smart. Just the rest of you guys are idiots? Okay.
Oh God.
Well, in reasonably intelligent people, a predicate to learning is confusion. When you reach a place where you are confused and you do not understand, it forces your mind to try to understand. And through understanding, you then gain the knowledge that you can apply to the experience, which is where you grow. Now, so we're up here sharing a bunch of information to you that may seem confusing. And you have the choice, again, to either reject the experience and get it again later on, or embrace it and try to understand it. Embrace it and try to dig deeper. See, because your family... The bottom of page 44, it says, if a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism and drug addiction, many of us would have recovered long ago. So what, throw out some codes of morals or better philosophies of life.
Go to church.
Meeting makers make it. Pray and meditate every day.
Live and let live.
Think.
Life's more.
Yeah, more physical exercise.
Don't get hungry, angry, lonely, or tired.
Stick with the winners. Change people, places, and things. What's that?
Keep it simple.
These are all mere codes. Codes of moral or better philosophy of life.
Nothing wrong with them, really.
Yeah. Some of them are born out of true experience.
And when you've worked the steps and have power in your life, they're things you have the capacity to practice.
But frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices, according to the doctor's opinion. How many times have your parents or family members thrown some sort of like reward out there for you? We'll give you this if you can just stay clean or sober for... And it's like they put some, you know, 6 months or a year or something like that. Like they don't want to say, like, we'll give it to you when you stay sober for the rest of your life. Like, there's going to be a place that you get to where then you can go relapse after that, right? That's frothy emotional appeal. That's a code of moral or better philosophy of life. Fact of the matter is, when you get sober, none of that shit matters anyways. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might. Giving her all she's got, Captain. But the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Anybody? Well, shit. What do I do? Lack of power. That's your problem. You had to find a power by which you could live, and it had to be a power greater than you. Obviously. But where and how are we to find that power?
Now, lack of power is not a problem when you accept being powerless. It becomes a problem when you want to do something and you can't do it. So the way I believe is a more effective way, in my opinion, of looking at this is like reflecting back on your first step and then saying, is it unacceptable for me to suffer from lack of power? Because when it becomes unacceptable to you, you're willing to take certain steps. As long as it's acceptable,
you're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. Unacceptance, people. Unacceptance. That's what we want. It's unacceptable to miss our children's events. It's unacceptable to hurt our parents. It's unacceptable to steal and cheat and rob from our friends. It's unacceptable to pawn all our possessions.
But wait, I thought acceptance is the answer to all my problems.
No.
How?
No. Unacceptance seems to be the answer to all my problems. Because unacceptance puts me into a course of action.
To seek God. Because that is actually the answer to all your problems.
Yes.
So.
You know, I didn't go through this process so I could drive a nice car, have some money in the bank, swipe my fucking credit card. The quickest way to die spiritually is to not help anyone. And the jewel of this entire program is when you get the... You get to show other people how to get free. You show them the answer. That's the most amazing part here. It pales in comparison to driving a nice car and having a nice home and all the other stuff that are byproducts for a lot of us. But that's not what it's about here. It's about helping one another.
So, the book's really great. It asks questions and it gives the answer right away. So, where are we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what the meetings are about. Oh, wait, no, it doesn't say that. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. The book contains the program. The meetings are the fellowship. When somebody says, are they in the program? My answer, unless it's somebody like Tarek that's in my 10-step accountability network, the answer is, I don't know if they're in the program, they're in the fellowship. Just because they come to meetings does not mean that they're in the program. The program is the steps. We'll get into that in a little bit. Its main object, this book's main object, is to enable you to find a power greater than yourselves which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral, and it means, of course, that we're going to talk about that thing that you guys hoped that we wouldn't continue to talk about, God. Who in here believes that there is something bigger than them? Of those that did not raise their hand, can you make the sun not come up tomorrow? If you can't make the sun not come up tomorrow, for everyone, not just yourself, then something's bigger than you. Police, are they bigger than you? alcoholism, drug addiction. So, you see, we've always had something bigger than us that we've worshipped in some way, shape, or form. Let's just go with God for now. Fire away.
Who here is having trouble with the God idea? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your honesty. One of the reasons we use this prayer is for that specific reason. In 10 years, when I sponsor guys that have problems with the God idea, 100% of the time, they have first step reservations. They haven't been crushed. The desperation has not materialized. The surrender is not there. Every individual that I sponsor that has been crushed by his first step, that stares at death in his first step, that stares at a first step without any hope, will not debate about God, will not argue with me about God. They just simply say, I'm willing to believe. I'm willing to move.
I'm open to consideration.
Yeah.
And the guy, and I talked about one of those guys last night. Mm-hmm. He like guys like when I test fired on God with him, he's just like, no. And then I got him by I just need this much space. I asked him, do you believe that I believe in a God? And he said, yes. I said, so can you accept that I believe that there's one? Yes. Do you believe that I have the ability, based on my experience, to stay sober on my own? And he said, no. And I said, so can you submit to the fact that there's something I'm depending on that's not me? He said, yes. And I said, good. We can start there. That's all it took. Now, if I would have asked him, can you accept that I believe in a God? And that's doing something in my life? And he says, no, we probably aren't going much further. I might keep firing at it, testing the boundary of it. But if he creates too much resistance, our buddy Chris from Texas, he says, we're going to talk about God in our meetings. And we're not going to not talk about God in our meetings. And if you have a problem with us talking about God in our meetings, then you go out there, get hurt some more, and when you come back, we're still going to be talking about God. It's up to you. Do you want to try to figure out how we do it? Or do you want to just reject the fact that it exists?
And some of you in your mind, when Brandon, that word God comes out projecting out of Brandon's mouth, there's maybe this part of you that has this idea of a separative God, that the God's up in the clouds, is a man with a white beard and a stick, and he's decided to fuck your day up today, right? So that's not the God I believe in. I grew up in a religious household, but my parents didn't, and my grandmother didn't teach me that there was a judge. It didn't matter how bad I fucked up, God always loved me, right? I didn't grow up with some of the stuff other people in the rooms grow up with. But I also don't have the conception of God that I grew up with anymore. Because of the excitement that the 12 steps can generate. Because of one sentence later on in the book, it says, be quick to see where religious people are right. It doesn't say they're always right, but it says make use of what they offer. So we got all these books up here that's the fourth dimension, in my opinion, where they're... It's like the Twilight Zone, or you've entered like this magical, invisible door, and there's all kinds of stuff out there that's been around way before the 12 steps.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at it. I've got, so this is Taoist. This is about your mind and energy. This is about nature. This one's a Hindu writing about Christ. This one is your mind. This one is your body. This one is Christ. This one's Buddhist. They're all talking about God. But why I believe the God that I have experience with in my life is so powerful is because my God is not limited to a dogma. It's open. And what's really, really cool is that the more that I read out of all these books, they all say the same thing from a different vantage point,
yep,
talking about the exact same thing.
But it takes being crushed by a self-imposed crisis to generate the desire to even investigate. And so the beautiful part about the 12 steps is you can create your own conception of God. You can't argue with that. It's what happened when Ebby was at the kitchen table with Bill, and Ebby's sitting there, and the Oxford groups were Christian. They were, at one point, their name was Second Christian. First century Christianity. So you know they were the staunch believers in Jesus Christ, which is fine. And Bill and Ebby are sitting in this kitchen table, and Bill's giving up all these reasons why there's no superhuman God with these superhuman strength and human qualities and not human qualities. And Ebby probably threw his hands up and said, "Fuck, Bill, I don't give a shit. Make up your own God." And Bill's like, "Oh, hold on, I can't argue with that." You can't argue with that. So page 46, bottom paragraph. Much to your relief, you're going to discover you don't need to consider another's conception of God, your dad's conception of God, your mom's conception of God, your grandparents' conception of God, whatever part of the country you grew up in's conception of God. Your own conception, however inadequate, is sufficient to make the start or the approach and to effect a contact with God. As soon as you admit the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, which are great words to use for God instead of God, underlying the totality of things, you begin to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided, condition, if you take other simple steps. We found that this power, God, does not make too hard a turn for those who seek Him. To us, the realm of the Spirit is broad, roomy, and all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. There's the condition to seek. It is openly believed to all men and women. Page 47, middle paragraph. This is going to test your atheism. Okay? Do you now believe or even are you willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself? And as soon as a man can say that he does believe or he's willing to believe, we emphatically, with a great deal of energy, assure you, you're on your way. That's beautiful.
That's it. That's all you need.
Yeah. A willingness.
And is it possible? Possible that there's a God.
And they got me early on in recovery. I'm sitting in the basement of the treatment center I was at. This guy, Andy, I'll never forget it as long as I live. He was doing a step study out of the 12 and 12, and we were doing step two. And it was a sunny day outside. The treatment center I was at, it was just like this. You walked outside, and there was a lake, and there was a dock, and the birds were chirping, and the sun was just really just perfect that day, and there was a sweet breeze coming through. And he looked outside, and he said, "Do any of you have the power to make that sunshine and that breeze blow and those birds chirp like that?" And nobody in the room could say they had the power to do that. He goes, "You have just discovered a power greater than yourself." He said, "That's all you need to do to work these 12 steps." That's it.
Nature. That's bigger than you. You walk in it, it's got to be bigger than you, right?
So once you say you're willing, you're no longer in the realm of atheism. It's gone. So now...
And really, the funny thing about atheism is that you believe that there is nothing, which is still a belief.
So let's turn to page 53. Now we're going to test your agnosticism. Middle paragraph. When you and I became addicts and or alcoholics crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, We have to fearlessly, without fear, face this question or proposition that either God is everything or else he's nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? So this chapter, we're not going to read all of it, but it does an amazing job of telling you and telling me how I've always had the capacity to have faith. You guys remember the first 6 months of getting a girlfriend? Complete faith, right? Absolute faith. And then take it a step further, it's absolute worship. So who in here can say they don't have the capacity to have faith or worship? You've had it. We've had it in money. We've had it in jobs. We've had it in family members. We've had faith in him. Capacity to have faith is present, right? Capacity to worship is definitely present. You know, when we were in high school in chemistry class and they told us this table is made up of protons, neutrons, and electrons and they're really close together and they form a solid, did anybody say, bullshit, I can't see it, prove it to me? We took it on faith, didn't we? But the minute somebody starts to talk to you about this creative force that permeates the universe, and some people use the word God to describe it, our perverse streak comes to the surface and we laboriously set out that it prove it ain't so.
Who in here has a stomach, a large intestines, and a small intestines? How do you know? Have you ever cut yourself open and found out?
No, it's proven.
It's proven how?
Scientifically, through previous tests.
On you?
No, on other humans.
Okay.
But don't other humans tell you there's a God?
Yep.
So is that not acceptable for other humans to tell you that there's a God and that they experience God?
Yep.
You're starting to understand that like we've got all these sorts of arguments in our head that are bullshit. That when we really apply logic to them, they don't apply. There's all sorts of shit that you guys believe that you have absolutely no way of proving. Now, you realize that you eat food and it doesn't come out as food, so something's going on. Right? Well, when you start to test some of these things, maybe in meditation and go in with an intent, or even do the fear prayer. You're experiencing fear, and you say, God, please remove this fear. Direct my thoughts to what you'd have me be. And then all of a sudden, your fear of money, and then you're like, man, I should call such and such about a job. And it's like, well, that's a coincidence. That's not God. Hmm. Well, it's a coincidence that you put food in your mouth and crap comes out your ass, but it happens every time. When you start to pray in the right way, you get an exact response exactly the way that it's supposed to happen. But we want to reject that because we can't see it.
So, go ahead, James.
I have a question. Earlier I had said I believe in Jesus. What? On a break, I want to lay down. I like question myself. If I really believe in Jesus, really believe in God, I wouldn't be sitting there. Straight up, because the fear of God, the fear of the Lord, would have kept me from doing a lot of things I did. Mm-hmm. So I had to really question myself, and that's why I want to ask you what you think about it.
Mm-hmm. It's good that you set that aside, like we've asked you to do in the prayer. You can go back and grab that later on. But what's happening as a result of you setting that aside is things are moving. Movement is not bad. Anybody ever heard of the law of attraction?
Yes.
Okay, if you remove the ATTR from the front of that second or last word, it's the law of action. I've written enough fear inventory to know that the things that I am most afraid of, by taking no action, always come true. This program is about action, doing something. You continue to do what you've always done, which is nothing related to recovery, and you continue to get the results you've always gotten, which is not recovery. You take action in recovery, things happen. You open yourself up to spirit, spirit cooperates. Hear a lot of people say it. God does not go where he is not invited, or she does not go where she is not invited, or it does not go where it is not invited. Once it's invited in, it's there. It was already there. It just didn't. Anyway.
The best definition of the word freedom that I've come across is the freedom to doubt and question everything and investigate everything. That's true freedom. And all you're going through right now is an investigation, and you're going through some doubt. That's not a bad thing, brother, questioning everything that you've grown up believing. It's an okay thing. I mean, think about it. If you don't question everything and you just say, okay, this is the way it is because somebody else told me it is, doesn't that sound like prison a little bit? That sounds like you're in bondage. Investigate and use your own personal experience in this world to find your answers. That's all we're saying. And one of the things I do with guys when I'm taking them to the, they always ask, you know, I've had a few guys ask, well, what does it mean that God is everything? And I always explain to them, well, maybe what they're just saying, as you move through the rest of your life, the ideal that you want to grow towards is in all of your decision making, you attempt to bring this idea of God into it. And if the universe brings you something that society says is negative, you look at, say, okay, God brought this to me for a specific reason. I co-created it with God. It's here. What's going on? And then all the positive things, we don't take credit for them because that's the way we miss the miracle. It is God as well. It's an ideal. That's how we try to live our lives. Right? I'm responsible, but I'm not responsible. It's living in two worlds. I'm not going to go any further than that with that concept. But that's what it's about here. Dark and light. Good and evil. Yin and yang. They're both God. One has to be there in order for the other to exist.
So let me throw this out too. Okay, so let's say you're having a conversation with some guy a week from now. And you say, yeah, this redheaded guy with tattoos came to do a workshop for us. Okay? One example. Somebody else refers to this guy named Derek that just spoke in Spain not too long ago. Another person refers to this guy that played AAU basketball back 15, 20 years ago. Pretty good jump shot. Another person describes this guy that's got a beard and tatted up arms. I just described the exact same person. But some people get the name wrong or different. Some people see it different ways. Some people experience it different ways. I'm still talking about the same guy. So we've got all these people running around in the world claiming that their God is the God. It's the same God. They're just calling it different shit and experiencing it different ways. Think about that for a minute. Who's right? I believe everybody's right, just not entirely.
So page 55 describes when and how and where and what attitude you need to go on this journey with. It says, actually, we're fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. But see, at times it's obscured by the calamity, the bad things that have happened in our lives, by ego or pomp, and by worship of other things. But in some form or other, it is there. This idea of God. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are as facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God is part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we have to search fearlessly, but God is there. He is as much a fact as we are. We find the great reality, this unsuspecting inner resource that we call God, power, creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of all things deep down within us. When? In the last analysis, it is only there that God can be found. It's the last place we're going to look is inside. You know, how many people in this room have tried geographic cures to solve your problem, right? Whatever you were looking for, you thought it was going to be there, right? And you got there and you just found yourself again. You didn't find what you were looking for, did you? Every single time, that's what happened. I could not outrun my shadow.
Who went to that, did that geographic, and they found the dope man, like, in no time. I mean, like, it's like they, like it's a homing beacon. Like, oh, there he is.
Here's the attitude. If you have this attitude coming out of this weekend, as you move forward in this process, chances are you're going to succeed. If Brandon and I can clear the ground a bit for you this weekend, if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, so lay aside the prejudice,
preconceived ideas and opinions,
enables you to think honestly, and encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then you can join Brandon and I on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. And the consciousness, the awareness of your belief is sure to come to you.
Ooh. Consciousness. Sounds like a completely different connection than what most people talk about, isn't it? Consciousness is an experience. An all-consuming experience that you're part of. Pretty groovy shit, huh?
In the back of the book, if you guys turn to page 568 for me. That first full paragraph says, most of us sense that the essence of a spiritual experience is simply the awareness of a power greater than ourselves. The essence, the central point, the crux, the main purpose, the essence, the truth, is just the awareness. It doesn't say you have to understand God or figure God out or have a conception that works. Yes, sir. Page 568, first full paragraph.
It's Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. I don't know what page it is in that one. It's the second page of that, the first paragraph.
Actually, I've got a third edition here.
Okay, this is one page over.
Okay.
Okay. That's the first full paragraph on the second page of the Spiritual Experience Appendix. Nobody ever talks about it, but it says it there. Pretty much it's telling me I need to think about God as often as possible. Well, how do I do that? I have found that working the steps on a regular basis tends to create that dynamic in my life. I think about this power on a regular basis. And the most amazing part is sometimes I start thinking about the power without making a conscious decision to think about the power. And that's the true sign of a true nurturing in the relationship.
Again, from what I read last night, the spiritual awakening depends on what we make of ourselves inwardly. It is minimally affected by outward material, social, or physical improvements. And then it also says, you will find God's guidance ever with you. The more you open yourself inwardly to its presence, accept wholeheartedly, therefore, whatever he sends you in life. His test can sometimes be difficult. Try always to refer everything back to him. Hold back nothing for yourself. Keeps talking about going back in. I don't know what the hell's going on. Why do these books all match up? Because what I have found is that spiritual truth transcends everything. If you apply spiritual truth to a situation and you do not get an affirmative response, it is not a spiritual truth.
Let's take a 15-minute break.